morning and welcome to episode 203 of Taking the Charge podcast. With you from Regensburg, Germany, I'm David Hein of Hein News. Thank you for stopping by and listening to some wonderful basketball stuff. Lots of hoops going on. And I'm looking forward to the Olympics. Should be fun. I just realized that probably would have been pretty cool to have a preview of the Olympics. But I think I might just have a review of the first week or so of the Olympics next week. I think that might be what I'll end up doing. Pretty excited. But I'm not really going to talk too much about it because I haven't really prepared for it. So I'm going to stick to some other stuff. And you will hear about that in a little bit. Just to let you know how to get in contact with the show. Sorry about that. Hein News on Twitter is the easiest way. HEINNEWS. The website is heinnews.com. The email address is heinnews@gmx.de. There's the Facebook group page, Taking the Charge Podcast. Just put that in there and you will find the group. We do ask you to knock on the door and ask to come in. But, of course, we will let you in. We just want to say hello. There's also Patreon. If you want to go and support the show, keep the podcast going. We are nearing 4 years of giving you guys free, wonderful content. It would be great if you guys were to go out there and support the efforts. That's patreon.com/takingthecharge, all one word. Pledge your support. Every bit helps to keep the show going. Patreon.com/taking the charge. Olympics again. Like I said, I'm not really prepared for it, and just kind of thought, man, I guess I probably could have done something on it, but I will do it next week. I think that's the best plan to do it. A couple things before we go into the main topics of what we're going to talk about. The main topic is going to be the FIBA 2016 FIBA Asia Under 18 Championship. I was kind of putting some. If you follow me on Twitter, you know that today I was kind of putting some stuff out there about the FIBA Under 18 European Championship 2016. Of course, that was postponed indefinitely, and was kind of trying to think about what would happen if many people seem to think, if it actually happens if it takes place in during Christmas break. And it seems to me that there's going to be a lot of people, there's going to be a lot of players that will not be released from their clubs or won't even be here. The 98 generation, couple of the top guys in that generation, they definitely won't be able to play if it's during college, during the Christmas break, because they're in college. You look at the Omer Etzeven, the big man from Turkey, who will be at NC State. Richard Freudenberg's at St. John's. I believe Eric Villa from Spain has committed to somewhere, drawing a blank at the right now, where he's going to be at. There's going to be guys in the 98 generation that are going to be in college already. And there's no way that they're going to be able to be released to come to the under 18 European Championship for nearly 2 weeks. That's just not happening. These colleges are slowly but surely getting into the I think they'll probably be about a maybe 2-3 weeks away from the conference schedule. And obviously these are some pretty high level guys, and they're not going to be, those colleges aren't going to be releasing these kids, you know, especially since they're high level guys, and they're probably going to be pretty important figures in these guys, in their teams. And then you look at, okay, we had a really good 99 generation. And if you're going Christmas break and you have a, if you have a, you know, 12, you know, 10, 12 day tournament, you know, you're a shade under 2 weeks, you go Christmas break, you know, that goes into New Year's. And, you know, there's the Adidas Next Generation tournament from the EuroLeague. And, that will probably overlap with the Rome tournament, which is a couple days after Christmas, and then the Hospitalet tournament, which is 3-4 days usually right after New Year's, and then shortly after that is even the Kaunas tournament, usually around 16, 17, 18, somewhere in that time frame. You know, you're gonna have to go to training camp beforehand. So you know, I don't know, okay. So it's a 98 generation tournament, the under 18 European Championship. But you know, a lot of these teams are gonna be relying, you know, probably would rely on 99 guys, 99 born guys, so 17 year old kids. But you figure the top guys from the Spanish clubs aren't going to be available because they're going to be at the Adidas Next Generation Tournament. The Italians aren't going to be available. At least one or two of the German teams won't be available because they'll probably be in either Rome or Hospitalet. The Serbs, usually they send one team at least to Rome. You know, I don't know. You know, this was kind of going through my head, trying to figure out what's going to happen now. And you know, I can't imagine things are going too smooth right now. Trying to figure out exactly when they're going to do this. Easter time. At least you have the college guys back, but you know, that's you know, you have the Turkish kids, you have the Italians, the Germans, the Spanish. The Spanish actually a little bit less, but you have clubs that have minimum requirements for nationals and on their rosters for games, you know, they're not going to be willing to, you know, let them go in Easter time. I don't even know when Easter is next year, but you have to figure late March, early to mid April. You know, that's close to the playoffs. And, you know, they're going to probably be needed there, if nothing else, just to fill roster spots for nationals. Of course, obviously not the ideal situation, but, you know, the Turks, for example, you know, they've had problems getting their guys available for these tournaments, you know, for the beginning of their training camps because their clubs are going so late in the playoffs, even though the players are more or less sitting on the bench. So, tough situation, and you know, I hate to say it, but I really think they should have tried to move it. It sucks that they would have had to done it. I know it's done, it's over with. You can't really say anything about it, but it just seems to me that it would have been a lot better resolved to, you know, postpone it a week, move it somewhere else. You know, a place that does a lot of tournaments, has the hotels and whatnot, and it would have saved a lot of headaches. So now I don't know. Someone I know I was talking to, you know, suggested you know, wild cards for the World Championship next year, and just not play it. And I thought, well, you can't really do that. So I don't know. It's a crazy situation, and I don't know how it's going to be resolved, but. It's not going to be easy to figure things out. All right. So before I get to Asia's under 18 championship, The actually, I guess we still have another week, and actually, I'll probably talk a little bit more about it next week too. The FIBA Under 16 European Championship is going to be starting on the 12th of February, so a week from Friday. Go check out the site. We're doing some features on that already. There's a couple up, and there'll be more. So there'll be more coming up the rest of this week and all of next week. So these are guys born 2000, some pretty high level talents. So go check, you know, just keep updating, update on the website, the Under 16 European Championship, and to, yeah, follow on really the top, some of the top future stars, from Europe. FIBA Africa, congratulations to, Angola. Taking down Egypt in overtime. It was, I tried to watch most of it. I didn't end up actually watching all of it, but I did try to watch, most of the final. Was a pretty exciting game. And I think that the athleticism of Angola was a little too much. You know, you look at Bruno Fernandes, and Silvio de Souza, and the other guy was Childe Dundau. That trio was really just way too much for pretty much everybody. You had the Egyptians had a pretty good tournament. They ended up losing. I think they only lost the two games. They got blown out in the final game of the group stage by Angola by 19. You have to figure that they were probably just keeping stuff for them for the final, because you figured that they really wanted to meet them in the final. They got by Mali by 3 points, 77-74 in the semis, and then had a tough game against the Angolans in the final. Ahmad Khalaf, 14 and 10 with three blocks. That was the big center for Egypt. Ezra Mustafa, held a little bit in check with 9 and 7 points and rebounds. They both were on the under 17s. Leading scorer was Tarek Rafat from the under 17s. He scored 14 points a game. Their other main guy was Saif al-Din Sandali, who was at the under 18, who was at the Albert Schweitzer tournament, one of the main guys from the Albert Schweitzer tournament, had a couple of pretty good games, but wasn't enough. So they finished second. The other big game, obviously, was that that Mali took down Tunisia. Mali having a couple of guys from the under 17 World Championship as well, and Mali took down Tunisia 59-52 in the third place game, meaning that they qualified for the under 17 World Championship. So congratulations to Mali coming, going to the global stage again. And it's pretty exciting to see them. It's an up-and-coming country at the youth level. Go back a couple episodes. We had Mo Tangara on the show. And then talked a little bit about Mali basketball as well. I was kind of hoping to have somebody who was at the tournament FIBA Africa Under 18 Championship, but didn't end up working out. Maybe next week. Have to see what's going on exactly. It was pretty clear that it was going to be Angola, Egypt, Mali, Tunisia, and Rwanda. Ended up finished fifth. That those were the main, the main candidates. You know, Tunisia took down Rwanda in the quarterfinals, which according to some people on site, that was a little bit of a surprise. You know, Rwanda were put in some pretty good efforts to get this team ready, you know, to try to qualify for the World Championship. But you knew that the powers are Angola and Egypt, and it was kind of just figuring out who's going to be the third team. And so it ends up being Mali. And yeah, you know, I hope that you know, D'Souza and Fernandez. Off the top of my head, don't know what their situation is going to be like next year, next summer. But I can imagine that they're going to be kind of question marks, depending on what colleges they go to. Which is a real shame. And I really hope that that they bring these guys, because these two are super studs. Fernandez, just a total beast. Bruno Fernandez, both guys were down at Mount Verd in Florida. You know, they played at the Olympic qualifying tournament. So big time players, and they carried the team to the title. So three teams from there. Congratulations to all three of them, and look forward to seeing them next year in Cairo. Under 18, FIBA Asia Under 18 Championship. Let's move on to that. I'm not going to really talk too much about it. I'm just going to let the interview talk for itself. I had a chance to talk to Hovsep Saridarian. He is the FIBA Asia Communications Manager. He was on site. He was sort of responsible for the media, various operations and whatnot for FIBA Asia there. And so was paying attention to the games live in person. And so figured, what a guy to talk to. So here's my chat with him, and enjoy that, and we'll catch you on the other side. All right, on the show this week, Hovsep Saridarian, the FIBA Asia Communications Manager. Hovsep, welcome to the show.
Thank you, David. It's an honor, it's a pleasure.
Thanks for coming on. We had your colleague William Rosario from FIBA Americas on last week. And he was talking about the FIBA Americas under 16 championship.
Yeah.
Sorry, under 18 championship. And I really think unfortunately there was the FIBA Asia Under 18 Championship and the FIBA Africa Under 18 Championship going on at the same time.
Same time, 22nd July till the 31st.
I just it was a major disappointment, because it was hard to watch games all day, and the FIBA Asia, and you probably didn't check it out at all, but the FIBA Asia feed, they really only had the one camera. I'm happy about anything, of course, but you only had the one camera from the high angle, and if you're only watching, and it was kind of far, and if you're only watching that all game, all day, it could get kind of tough. And then you also, I mean, unless you really know the teams, it's kind of hard to kind of follow it, because you know who's got the balls. You know, sometimes you could tell from the body type or whatever, okay, this is this guy or this guy, but it was kind of hard. So and then at the same time, was, you know, the U20s at the beginning of the tournament, the U20s was going on, and of Europe, and I put it out there, I tweeted, I said, you know, you got to really appreciate how the level of production that goes into some of these feeds. The only thing I actually talked to you about it. The only thing I had a problem with was of the FIBA Asia. I don't know if anybody saw it, but if you go back and watch some of the videos, is that the television production team, whatever, they cut to a close up to the basket, like on a, mainly on free throws, and to
which
see
was very annoying for a lot of people.
For me, it was very, very annoying. It was, I mean, okay, you kind of get used to it. You don't like it, but you do kind of get used to it. But you miss so much action around the basket otherwise. But so, I guess first of all, so you're FIBA Asia Communications Manager. It was in Tehran. Iran won it. I guess general reflections, I guess also from an organizational standpoint, from a FIBA Asia standpoint, you know, because the teams were not qualified for really until only a couple of weeks. The dates were pushed back a little bit. From an organizational standpoint, everything else, how satisfied are you? How satisfied FIBA Asia with how this all went down?
Okay, Dave, thank you first. Regarding the production, just one thing that I would like to tell you, and that TV production in this part of the world, and it's going to improve. And we are very much working on this because, as you know, Iran is not a very hot destination for hosting events like these. So we are working on helping this federation and the TVs that are affiliated with them to improve the production and the way the games are broadcasted so that nobody misses the action. Organization-wise, actually, it was supposed to start on the 15th of July, from 15th to the 22nd, but we had to push it back to the 22nd till 31. Actually, the teams, regarding the teams, as you know, Asia is divided into 6 subzones. Some of the subzones had their qualifications, for example, the Southeast Asia, from which the Philippines, Thailand, and Indonesia qualified. For WABA, due to the exceptional political problems, the way you want to call it, couldn't organize, couldn't get enough teams for the qualifiers. That's why the only 3 teams who applied for this subzone championship, they got the honors of representing West Asia. East Asia, again, they didn't have any qualifiers. Same for Central Asia. South Asia had qualifiers. India comprehensively qualified. Overall, it was a very good, I think it was a very good event, because not only that, I mean, you can tell and you can see in the last 3 editions, it's China has been dominating it. This time China finished 5th. This shows that teams are improving, and it's not a one team dominating the whole competition. So I think, yes, the U18 Asia in Tehran was good. I'm not going to say it was very, very good, but it was good. And I think we're going to work on this and improve for the coming years.
Why don't we kind of just go on and say, all right, Iran won the tournament. They slipped up twice in the group stage, losing to Japan and Korea, and then found themselves in the unfortunate situation of having to face China in the quarterfinals. Mm-hmm. Were able to get that victory and then kind of carry that onto the title. I guess maybe how, you know, looking at the full field, a worthy champion, do you think that they, you know, they beat China in the quarters, they beat Korea in the semis, and then they beat Japan, who I think was a little bit of a surprise. We can kind of time to talk a little bit about this in a bit. You know, how worthy of a champion do you think this Iranian team is?
Actually, Iran, they really surprised everybody, because the pre-tournament favorites, they were not pre-favorite tournament favorites. And when they lost to Japan and Korea, everybody said, yes, we knew they were not favorites. But I think in the quarterfinals against China, that was the main the shift that happened. The more important thing that happened is that the players got confidence in themselves, and they were charged. So you can see the difference. And actually, credit to Coach Nuri, who read and knew what the problem of the team was during the group stages and improved a lot in the latter stages of the championship, especially if you see against China. They lost in the group stages, they lost against Korea and Japan mainly because of their slow transition in defense, because Iran are a shooting team and they were missing a lot. So since they were missing, their transition was slow, and Japan, especially Nishida, and from Korea, Yang and Park, took advantage of that. I had a chat with the captain, Azari, after they beat Lebanon, and he said that we are glad that we're meeting China, because China are a slower team than Korea and Japan. And they like to penetrate more and play low post, which suits our defense, because as you saw, Khandampur and Rezai have been great under the basket, defending, block-shotting. Fan Ziming was nullified throughout the 40 minutes. I mean, yes, I have to say that they were the champions because they fought hard. The team, the coaching staff, they read everything and improved. And I have to say that they're a very, very good team.
I think that quarterfinal between Japan and between China and Iran was the game of the tournament. You know,
yes.
I mean, knowing everything at stake, hosts, three-time champions, China kind of having a rough summer, and also last year with the under-16s, kind of some things going on, and that. You know, it ended up being a 62-59 victory. You know, much closer in the to the point range, what Iran wanted to play. You know, you said they didn't really want to go out and run much.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, if anybody's interested, you know, the games are on YouTube, FIBA's YouTube channel. If you're gonna go back and watch any game, I'd say go back and watch that one. I think you'd probably agree with that one, right?
Yeah, it was the game of the tournament actually. Because the emotions were very high, and actually people were crying after the game because they couldn't believe that. And for them it was a bigger game. One of the journalists told me that it's bigger than the FIBA Asia Championship in 2013 when they won it. So you can tell how important that victory was for the fans, for the players, for the coaching staff, and for the local media. Because after that, the local media started to come more and be more interested in this championship.
Where do you place this? I know you were talking a little bit also to Dirk Bowerman and the senior team, national team coach, and you know, just talking to officials, whatever. But what is your feeling on the importance of this victory, this championship? You know, they last won in 2008. You know, they were in the final in 2014, lost to China. You know, just the fact that to get a victory at 18 over China is not an easy feat. Maybe just in general, knowing also that the senior international team is kind of going through transitional phase. You know, Haddadi and Bahrami, you know, they're kind of, you know, slowly they need to be replaced. Maybe the importance of getting this championship.
Yes, I think this suits Bowerman's new policy of youth coming and to replace the old. And I think there are two or three players who are ready right now. This is my opinion, but I think they're ready to jump to the senior national team. I mean, a player like Khandampur, number 18 of Iran, is already playing with Mehram, yes, Mehram Club, and he's in the starting five. So he has the experience, he has the physique, and you can tell and see from the way he plays, he's very mature for an 18-year-old. And also Mohammad Jafari, one of the key players for Iran in this championship, is also, Coach Nuri says, is ready for the senior team. And I think this, we were going to see a lot of this class of 18 in Bowerman's new Iran team.
I'm always a guy who kind of looks ahead as well. They did have a 2000 youngster, Amir Hossein, Raza Afar.
Yes,
kind of close.
Raza Afar, yeah.
Sort of a big, obviously you could tell he's a bit younger. He's 2000 born, so 2 years younger. You look at the stats, and one of the main things that stand out is even though he's not really that tall, but he's got the 1.5 blocks a game. And in 15 minutes is almost seven rebounds. Maybe what you think about him, knowing that, I always say that if a 16-year-old comes and does something at 18s, it means a little bit more.
Yes, I think Reza Ifar was one of the key important players in the Iran defense, because you saw against Japan, Korea, and even against China, defense was what was key for Iran in those wins. And Reza Ifar, along with Khandampur, they were great at the back. Iran had locked their defense. And against Lebanon, although that game wasn't relevant for Lebanon, but still, that was a game where everything changed for Iran. They changed the way they played, and they carried the same system throughout until the final. So yes, Reza Ifar is one of the most important players in this U18 team. I don't know if it's too early for him to jump into the senior national team, but most definitely he's going to have the future.
Knowing that you kind of said that Iran is actually kind of a surprise that they were in the final. I think even a bigger surprise of team being in the final is Japan, going into the tournament at least. That their number one player, Rui Hashimura, elected to stay or be in the States or work on schooling or whatever, knowing he's going to Gonzaga or a prep school to prepare to go to Gonzaga or whatnot. Maybe you're looking at Japan, definitely a team that relied on some shooting as well. Thoughts about Mikami struggled on his shot quite a bit. They had this youngster Schaefer who's kind of still new to the game. But Nishida had a really good tournament, but the guy that kind of opened my eyes, I'm trying to find his name again.
Sugimoto,
exactly.
Yeah.
Averaged 18 points. It's this 98 generation. Other than Hashimura, I didn't know too much about. Maybe your thoughts about the Japanese team, and maybe what made the difference for them in order to get to the final of this tournament.
Okay, actually, first of all, I want to say that Japan have a very good coach.
Yeah,
Tobias Leubel.
I love Torch.
German. For me, he's a genius. This is my personal opinion. And actually, it was special after Lebanon beat them by almost 20 points. Nobody saw Japan in the final. Mainly because Rui Hashimura was not playing, and everything was a doubt that their best player is not with them.
And they also lost to Korea by 20 in the first game.
Yes, exactly. They lost to Korea as well.
By 20
Yeah, exactly. But I think Leubel found... he knew how to... It was like a chess. He knew how to move these players. He is a motivational guy. He likes to motivate his players a lot. And I've been close to the bench, and I've been hearing what he was telling his players. But for me, the surprise is Sugimoto, who was a late addition to the team. And he averaged almost over 18 points, including 43 points against Kazakhstan. So this Japan team, basically, they like to shoot. And they've shot perfectly well in the latter stages of the championship. And I think Nishida and Sugimoto have both been key contributors, as well as Masuda. Masuda was excellent in the final. He scored 35 points. And I think I have to credit again Coach Loibl, because this was a very, very big achievement for Japan. They haven't been there since 1990 in the final.
Yeah, 1990, and going to the Under-19 World Championship for the first time since 99.
Yes, yes, yes. I think they were very pleased. They were pleased when they got to the final, and in the final they battled hard. But I have to say that the home fans didn't make things tough on them. So, but they were satisfied. They were satisfied with the result. Yeah.
Lebanon started the tournament 4-0, and then lost. I believe then they lost to Iran. Is that right? In the last game of the
Iran, they lost over 20 points against Iran.
Yeah, and then got knocked off in the semis and were playing for third place and a spot in the under 19 worlds. But it was Korea that ended up getting it. Yeah. I guess maybe. Maybe first talk a little bit about let's go to Korea first, because you have a connection to Lebanon. But let's go to Korea first. You know, this is a team that had high aspirations. You know, you had a couple of the guys in from the under 17 team that reached the quarterfinals for the first time ever. You know, who also beat China at the under 16s last year. You know, adding to those guys a couple of pretty good 98 players as well. Thoughts about this team? You know, now they're going to be going to the World Championship under 19s. Is this a team that you think can kind of do the same result? Kind of aggravate the same big teams, let's call them, or you know, as they did in Saragossa?
For me, in my opinion, Korea are one of the best teams in Asia, especially this U18 team, which most of them were playing in the U16. They were the champions. I think I was a bit surprised that they weren't in the final, because they have the experience. I mean, some of the players were in the U16, then went to the U17 Worlds. Surprisingly, Jung Yoon Lee, who was averaging almost 19 points in the U17, didn't get much minutes. I don't know why. He averaged 11 minutes. But I think Jaemin Yang, Jiwoo Park, and even surprisingly, number 13, Han, who finished as top scorer of the team, I think they did pretty well. And they could have beaten Iran in the semi-final, but usually when Korea struggle from outside, they don't win games. That's their problem. They had 34 attempts, of which they scored only 7. And again, against Iran, you have to shoot. You must have a good shooting percentage, because you cannot play them. You cannot penetrate inside. I have to say that this team has a great future. And they're going to be, Yang, for example, is going to be one of the best players in Asia in the next 10 years. Definitely. Again, Shin Min-suk, Yang, Lee, and Jiwoo Park. For me, there are 4 excellent players.
You know, I had the chance to watch Yang Jae-min at the under-17s. And obviously, you know, there's, you know, hasn't been finalized, but he's, you know, due to sign a deal with a Spanish club, for next season. You sat on him, watched him for 8 games, you know, and this is against older competition now, you know, whereas, you know, last, you know, in Saragossa, it was his same age group. You know, I was impressed with the maturity. I mean, you know, on top of the game that he has, but also the maturity and leadership. You know, was that basically sort of the same thing? I mean, did he just kind of, you know, do the same thing? Maybe just general reflections on Yang there.
Well, David, Yang is the total package. He's 17, but he's very mature for a 17-year-old basketball player. He's very intelligent. His basketball IQ is very high. And he's the general in the court. I mean, he instructs the team. He knows when to shoot, when not to shoot, when to pass, and everything. I think he's just like I said, he's the total package. And I think he's got a great future. And hopefully when he signs, he's going to be the first Korean, I think, in Europe, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
He didn't name the team that he's going, but he said it's going to be in Spain. So let's see in the next few weeks if anything's going to, if he's going to join one of the well-known teams. But I think he has a great future, yes.
I think it's a great move also for Korean basketball. And, I mean, it's something that I think the Iranians should do. I think Chinese young players could also go over there. You know, Europe is such a great – there's so many great places in Europe to improve your basketball, especially at a younger age, where they don't have to, you know, have to worry about foreigner restrictions or whatnot on a professional club.
Sure.
So I think it's a great move.
One thing about Korea, the U16, they had a coach called Oh Sail, who was also the U17 coach. And he's the one who made this team that we see, the U18 team right now. And he did develop these stars, Min Suk, Yang. He knew how to utilize them on the court. And I think you met him there, right, Oh Sail, yeah. The coach of the Korea?
Yeah.
He has a very strange system. He plays with 6-7 players.
Exactly.
And it was very odd for us to see in the U16, and everybody was like, especially when they lost against China, like 30 points during the group stages, everybody was like, oh, the players are exhausted. And he was like, these players are 16, 17. They don't get exhausted. This is what he said. And we saw the same thing in the U17. And Yang, Min Suk, Lee, all these players got used to that system. Now, for the U18, the coach, Oh Sail, wasn't the coach. And he, I think Moo Jin Lee is a great coach, but I think he should have adopted that system because it would have been much better for this team.
Yeah, everybody played at least 9 minutes. Unheard of. Unheard of.
Yes.
It was definitely pretty crazy. The team that kind of near and dear to your heart, the Lebanese, you know, hadn't been to the Asian podium since 06. We're obviously one loss to South Korea from going back to the under-19s for the first time since 07. You know, we talked beforehand about some of the nice talent that they have. Obviously, there's a lot of disappointment, but looking at the fact that quite a few of the guys are still only 17. Mm-hmm. Maybe what do you think is the biggest thing that they take out of this competition? And knowing that the senior national team is kind of the next step for most of these guys as far as national team goes, who do you think really played well at a high level to make a step towards the senior team?
Actually, David, Lebanon started with a 4-0 record. But I think they lost the element of surprise in the quarterfinals and the semifinals and even during the playoff games. And I think this is the main reason why they're not on the podium, is because they didn't have plan B. Against Iran, when they lost, everybody thought that they were just relaxing, the coach was rotating, they didn't want to play. But no, there was a problem in the team. when Iran closed on them and they were then defense, they're tight, they couldn't penetrate, couldn't play inside because in the first three, four games, Mark Al-Khoury was very dominant inside. But Mark Al-Khoury couldn't play against Khandanpour, who was very tough on him. The same in the other games. And they don't have streaky shooters. So that affected the team. But I think they did very well. No, I didn't personally, I didn't expect them to be here. Surprisingly, Karim Zeynoun and Salim Alaaddin didn't get more minutes. I mean, 19 minutes average Zeynoun, Alaaddin 16 minutes. And these two were the top stars of the U16 team with over 22 points per game. And we all know Karim Zeynoun, and you know him from the BWB. I know you were following it. And he's one of the best talents in Lebanon right now. And as you know, Lebanon are searching for the next El Khatib.
Yeah.
He could be the next El Khatib. But
which one is that? Who's
Karim. Karim Zeynoun.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And Salim Alaaddin also. But I have to say that they did well. They had only four players from that U16 team, surprisingly, because that U16 team should have been better in the U18. But yet again, Korea obviously were much, much better than them in the semifinal because the coach read the team, read their opponents very well. Same for Japan. Loibel had, I saw Loibel before the game and he had three plans against Lebanon. In the first quarter, he used the paper one, paper two in the second quarter, paper three in the third quarter, and they won. Because he scouted the Lebanon team in the first game. The same Korea. Korea lost 13 points against Lebanon, but beat them almost 26, 27 points. That's because the coach scouted Lebanon, and Lebanon didn't have plan B and lost elements of supplies.
Yeah, shooting 23% in the semifinal from three-point range, yes, against Japan, and 19% in the third-place game against Korea.
Actually, the shooting problem is that because the timing and you see players who are meant to play in low post are shooting from 3 points. So actually, they lost the way Joe was instructing them, and they paid the price in the last two games. And against India, they allowed almost 65 or 68 points, which is too much.
I don't want to go through every team, just because I don't think it's super interesting that way to do it. I guess, we talked about the surprise finalists. Maybe a team out there that kind of surprised you. I don't have to dwell on it too bad, but maybe just a little bit of a disappointment team that you thought that you were expecting a little bit more from.
Actually, I was surprised with India. They were super good. India. I mean, I think, in my opinion, India in the next 10 years they're gonna be a force in Asia. That's because the federation is planning and they're looking for players, scouting, developing and everything. India are going to be a force in the next 10 years. And we can see in each tournament, in the seniors, they were in the quarterfinals. And the U18, they were also in the quarterfinals for the first time since 2004. And I think they have Gupta. For me, Boyamozi scored 17, he's the top scorer and everything, but Gupta for me is a very, very intelligent player, a long, tall player, and who's very smart. He averaged double-double. And I think they can have a very good team in the next couple of years with these players being promoted to the senior team. I mean, there are three or four players in this U18 team who can easily become regulars in the senior team. As for the team that disappointed me the most is the Philippines. Because actually, they have to say that they are hard workers. They were battling and fighting in each game. And they had the talents, Gallego, Mendoza, but I think they didn't have tall players. They're too short for the competition.
Which is so often the case, unfortunately, for
yes,
the for the for the Philippines.
Yes, yes, because in the U16 they finished fourth and they beat China. And I expected
that was the first loss ever.
Yes,
at the under-16s for China.
Yeah. I expected them to be in the top five at least. Same thing for Chinese Taipei. I mean, they were missing Benson Lin, very important player, but still I expected them to be. I mean, they finished with 4-1 record in the group stages. They got beaten by Japan 77-71. And again, this is because Japan upped their game in the quarterfinals, and opposite to Chinese Taipei. I mean, they have very good players, Xiang, Wu actually didn't get a lot of minutes, surprisingly. But Cao,
that's the little point guard that people have seen maybe at Jordan Brand
yes.
Classic, and he was also at Basketball Without Borders.
He's a great player. I mean, with the next few years, I think he's going to be a top player in Asia. Maybe he and Yang, they're going to carry the Asian banners for long. I mean, he's a great player. I hope he continues developing because he has the potential. But disappointed overall with Chinese Taipei's ranked sixth, yes.
China, I guess we probably should address China. You know, they only lost one game. You know, so often at a tournament, it's either losing the wrong game, winning the right game, losing by too many points or whatever. You mentioned, Fan Ziming, who really stepped up bigger later in the tournament. They didn't bring much of the big guys. I mean, the big name guys, let's say, from the under 16 and under 7 team. Mm-hmm. The African
Jianju Tarik.
The first mixed blood Chinese player. Anytime you don't finish in the top three and miss the under 19 worlds, you know, you have to classify it as a disappointment. Again, it's a matter of losing the wrong game. But do you think this team, the players on this team help the really still very strong positive development that the senior team is doing? Even the under 17 team last in Saragossa, you know, they had a couple of exciting guys. Maybe just in general, your thoughts about this team and the total long-term progression of Chinese basketball.
First of all, China didn't surprise anybody when they finished with a 5-0 record in the group stages, mainly because they're the tallest and biggest team, averaging 2 meters, and they have the dominant Fan Ziming, who is a veteran, you can say, compared to the others in these championships, the youth level championships. And I was kind of surprised with the way he performed because everybody expected him to be the best player in the championship right from the start. But he wasn't that dominant Fan Ziming that we expected. Instead, we got Jianju Tariki, like you mentioned, the mixed African, the first mixed African Chinese player. And I think China finished fifth because they lost the wrong game. And because Tariki was contributing in the first four or five games, was very bad in the quarterfinals and in the classification games. I mean, against Iran, he had only 1 point. He didn't register a single target. He had no shot on target. That's mainly because of the strong Iranian defense. But again, China had the same problem they had in the U16. The main focus is to pass the ball to the big man inside to do the dirty job. And I think that's not working anymore in Asia, because other teams have big players as well. Iran, for example, they had Khandanpour, they got Rezaifar, they got Rezai. Same for Chinese Taipei. I mean, they narrowly beat Chinese Taipei. They needed a strong fourth quarter to beat Chinese Taipei. In the group stage, they were losing by 16 points.
Right, right.
And they struggled.
The big comeback, huh?
Yeah, the big comeback. They struggled against Chinese Taipei. And that game should have alarmed the coach, because there were weaknesses exposed by the Taipei team, and Iran took advantage of that. They scouted that game and took advantage. But Chinese basketball, I think, the disappointment of U16 and the disappointment of the U18 it's time for them to change the system, the way they play, the way they produce the players. I mean, they should have they should adopt the way Chinese Taipei is doing now. They have tall players and they have dribblers. China, they don't have dribblers. Either they have a shooter, for example, they had Du and Wu in this championship in the U18, mm-hmm. and they had the big man inside, Daruki Ziming. The point guards, they never have a good point guard. Same in the U16. So I think it's time for reevaluating everything and going back to the drawing board when it comes to selecting the youth players and the youth teams. But I mean, China can have 10 national teams, I think. Maybe it's a problem of selection, that's all. Maybe some of the good players who didn't participate in this championship.
I'm gonna give you a little bit of pushback on the, just trying to call up this, the system. I really do like the 2000 guard, for the Chinese, the one who was at the under 16s last 17. Year. And under 17s this year. I'm trying to blank on his name. You know what I'm talking about?
Chinese name.
Yeah, the little guy. The little guy. He was also at the I have him here in a second. Zhu.
Zhu, yeah.
Zhu Ji. J I E.
X U, right?
Yeah, X U and then J I E. Small little guard. He's listed as 177, 5'10". 2000 born. I like him. I'm not necessarily long term for the national team, but you know, he is he was one guy that was definitely necessary to have in that team last, you know, at the under 17, just because he's a guy who kind of puts things together. I guess people are going to look at the stats of the tournament, and they're going to notice Ihab El-Sawari, the leader of the Iraqi team, averaged 32 and 18, mm-hmm. plus almost two blocks a game, 12.5 of 20. Well, what is it? So 89 shots in four games. So it's so it's 22 shots a game, plus almost 11 free throws a game. Maybe just in general, thoughts about him. Obviously, he was by far their best player.
He's a dominant player. I think he's one of the best in the nation. And he's going to be one of the best because he's tall, intimidating, and actually is... he shot almost over 60%, if I'm not mistaken.
He shot 56% for the tournament.
Well, almost 60%, yeah. I think he's Iraq's best player in the last 10 years. He's coming. He's a big guy. And I think it's not easy to play against him. Everybody told me. because he's very good. And he's fast for a tall guy and a big guy. So Zuhairi, Ihab Zuhairi.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, there's nobody else in the team to help.
Exactly.
Yes, but
he'd be on the alternative team, or not on the alternative team, but on an all Asia team.
Yes, actually, Iraq could have done better in this championship if Abdullah, the top scorer in the U16, was with them.
Right. We were
talking. But due to problems in Iraq, he couldn't attend and couldn't come with the team. And if he was there, I think Iraq could have been in the quarterfinals.
Probably instead of India, I would think.
Probably instead of the Philippines.
Or instead of Philippines, right. Instead of Philippines.
Yeah.
Last guy in particular I want to ask you about, Justin Bassey, a Colorado-born, is going to Harvard, plays for Thailand, averaged 21 and almost 14, plus more than 2.5 assists. A steal and a half and more than a block a game. Did only shoot 40% from the field, with 26% from 3-point. Basically, as a guy who probably only met his teammates maybe 2 weeks, I would say.
Yeah.
Maybe 2 weeks ahead of time. Never played any international basketball. I can't remember now. I know I asked him, but I can't remember right now if he said he'd ever played with a shot clock or not, because I know a lot of America doesn't play with a shot. American high school does not play with a shot clock. Obviously a guy going to Harvard, play for Tommy Amaker, there's got to be some in there. I was impressed with some of the few Thailand action that I ended up watching. You were there, he played 37 minutes. Thoughts about Justin Bassey?
I think Justin Bassey has everything to become a top basketball player. I think maybe not even in the NBA in the next few years, because he's well built. He has the pace and he has the touch. Just like you said, maybe he didn't shoot 50% or 45, he shot 40% only, but he's a very intelligent player and strong, and he's the best team in this Thailand team, the U18. And I think he's against Philippines. He had 34 or 35 points, and it was the first time for Thailand to beat the Philippines. I mean, it was a major disappointment, because this U18 team that you see, the Thailand team, faced the Philippines team in the qualifiers for the U18. In the group stages, they lost by almost 40 points. And in the final, they lost almost 30 points. And it's basically 11 players were the same, except for Bassey, who recently joined. So the addition of Bassey to this Thailand team helped them beat the Philippines, which is the giants of Southeast Asia. And I have to say that, to be fair to others, Taptim was good also for the for Thailand. But Bassey is... I think he's one of the best in Asia right now, U18.
Let's see. How can we say this? I mean, how much can this help Thai basketball in the long run? I mean, is there much to go along with him? Let's put it that way.
They can build a team around him.
But do they have the pieces back home? I mean, are they developing the pieces? Is there much there to go around with them? I mean, you can build it around them, but you have to have something to build with.
Yes. Yes. You know? Now, they don't have individual stars, but they have a team. If you go and follow the Southeast Asia Stankovic Cup, which is a qualifier to the FIBA Asia Challenge, you can see that in the final against the Philippines, they played twice against the Philippines. They lost once 77-76, which is something that doesn't happen usually, and against a very good Philippines team, including Troy Rosario, who's a Gilas starter right now. And in the final, they narrowly lost by 11 points. So the Thai team they are developing basketball. Thailand is improving in Asia. They have some good players coming. They have Watana, they have Dasong, They have good players. So I think if these players develop, and along with Bassi, if they build a team around Bassi with few additional players, I think they're going to be, they're going to compete with the Philippines as a top team in Southeast Asia. Of course, since the Philippines are right now are doing the Cadet, Gilas Cadet program. So they're on a rebuilding also. They're rebuilding themselves. So I think Thailand, they have the chance to be one of the best in Southeast Asia. Of course, with Bassi and with the right direction, with a good coach.
I said we don't want to talk about every team, and we're not going to do it. The two teams we're going to leave out. Sorry about Indonesia fans and Kazakh fans, but
it's okay. But I would like to Indonesia. I have to say one thing: that Indonesia, I admire what they're doing, because probably they came and they knew that they're the shortest team in the championship. They knew that they didn't have the quality of the others, but they are still participating, fought hard, and that's mainly because they know that even. And despite losing by 50-40, they're learning something. They're giving the players the exposure, the experience, which is going to help them. The problem in Indonesia is that they don't have tall players. I had a chat with the coach, and he said we had three tall players, but I couldn't get them with me because they can't run.
Okay.
That's the problem. And another problem is that this team was assembled 5 days before the championship. So you cannot make a winning team or a championship caliber team or a competing team in 5 days. Definitely.
And only 10 players.
With 10 players, yes. So that it means that they don't have the pool.
Yeah, yeah.
And as for Kazakhstan, actually, I was surprised with them, 1-4. They have good players, Parfumov, one of them. Timoyev, I think. Forgot the name.
Nikita.
These players, Nikita, Timofeyev, exactly. I think problem with Kazakhstan is that if you watch their games, they had a very terrible game against the Lebanon, then slightly improved. That's because Kazakhstan arrived to the tournament they were the latest to arrive first. They didn't have time to practice and everything, so the first game was terrible. That's the reason, understood. But the other games, I expected them to perform much better.
Where was that? Here. In 2012, there were 16 teams. 2014, there were 14 teams. This year, there were 12 teams. Is that an exception? Is that now going to be the rule? Is there anything you can say about that going ahead long term? What the number of teams will be?
No, actually, it's the 16, but there are exceptional cases this time from the Gulf teams. Gulf teams couldn't participate, and since there were no qualification in the East Asia sub-zone, we didn't want to nominate any teams. So the four teams were qualified and the two teams couldn't. Hong Kong, East Asia, Hong Kong and the others. So that's why we kept with the 12-team format, but nothing has changed. For U18, it's a 16-team.
Yeah, okay. Great. I guess that's about it. Do we know where the under-16s are going to take place next year yet?
Still early.
Yeah.
But we've got the U18 women coming up in Thailand in November, from November 13 to November 20.
Okay. And are you going to be heading there? You're going to be heading there?
Yes.
Expectations on that one?
Expectations that one. So we have already, it's 12 teams, similar to the senior women format, with two levels. Level 1 teams are already qualified, and level 2 teams, the 6 teams that apply the first, get to participate in the level 2, which is level B. So far we have 6 teams already qualified. We have the host Thailand in level 1, China as champions level 1, We've got Taipei, Japan, Korea, and India. These six are already qualified, and they're going to be in level one. And level two, the six teams in the level two will be determined in the next couple of months.
Okay. Is there any thoughts? I mean, one of the things that, you know, living in Europe, you know, every summer we have the 16s, 18s, and 20s. This is the last year was the fourth cycle, I think, of the 16s.
Yes.
And they rotate, or they swap, go back and forth between 16s and 18s to qualify accordingly then the 17 World Championship or the 19 World Championship. Is there any thought of putting together a 16 and 18 every summer, or do you just want to, you know, work on the structure that there is now and improve that?
Actually, right now we're sticking with this, the biennial U16 and the U18.
Yeah.
Probably in the future we might improve, we might change, we might add U20, but so far I think this is it. It's U16 and U19.
Yeah. I just always thought that it's such a good way to have, to give each class, you know, each generation a chance to be their own team, you know.
Yeah.
But I know that, you know, a lot of the smaller you mentioned Indonesia, you know, they weren't able to put together, they were only able to bring together 10 players. And I can imagine that being an issue for quite a few of the teams.
Yes, actually, in Asia, we have that problem. But I think things are changing in Asia. Asia is rising. This is what I like to tell everybody. Because, and in the U17 Worlds, when I was watching Korea, it's as if I'm not watching a traditional Asian team. They were very, very good. And unfortunately, if they didn't face the unbeatable US team in the quarterfinal, they could have been in the semis. So things are changing in Asia. Teams are coming up. There's a change. And with the new competition format, there's going to be even better player production. Federations are going to produce... federations are going to be more effective when it comes to scouting, developing players, developing their own talent identification criteria and everything. So in the next few years, I think we're going to see Asian teams challenging for the gold medal in the youth championships, and why not in senior events as well.
Okay, Hovsep Sarardian. How close was I? Sarardian.
Sarardian.
Thank you very much, FIBA Asia Communications Manager. Thanks a lot for coming on the show. Appreciate it, and good rest of the summer.
Thank you, David. You too. Thanks.
All right. Yes, fantastic stuff. And you want to go back to... read anything about it. I wrote the features, most of the features for the website, and I think some of them were pretty good. Not all of them were fantastic, but some of them were pretty good. So if you want to go back to the website, go check them out. And I think that the one game, if you're going to go back and watch a game, if you're going to watch any game from that tournament, it should really be that quarterfinal between China and Iran. Really congratulate Japan. You know, they really surprised me more than anything else. I didn't really see them making that much of a run, especially not having Rui Hachimura. So yeah, congratulations to Torsten Leibel and the Japan group, and a little disappointed with Lebanon that they weren't able to pull it through in the end. But you know, I guess you got to win the big games, you know, and Korea, that's a pretty good group, you know, like Hofstad said, you know, that might be, you know, the best team in Asia right now. And maybe, you know, the stuff they're putting together might for a long while. I hope you enjoyed that. I'm going to leave it at that. I know we went really long last week, but I kind of wanted to get it all in there. Like I said, next week might go back and review a little bit of the under 18 FIBA Africa Championship. Not sure exactly what we're going to do, but probably talk a little bit about the Olympics. But again, we'll wait and see on that. So with that, I guess, you know, the Olympics start, and Olympics, actually the football's already started, the soccer's already started, so you can go back, you can go and watch that if you want. Next week, or this week, you're going to have basketball to watch, the Olympics. The under 18 European Championship Division B is going on. Unfortunately, there's no live stream. Under 16s haven't started yet. Really just kind of just quote the Olympics right now. In a couple days, and then starting middle next week, you also have the under 16s. So that'll be good. That'll be a good tournament to watch. With that, last thing let you know is what you are going to be listening to. And the song is called Subject to Change. Subject to Change. It's by The Red Thread. And it is available on freemusicarchive.org. Go check them out. Please go support the show on patreon.com/ Taking the Charge. Pledge your support. Make sure that the show can keep going. And with that, we will talk to you next week. Thanks for stopping by. We'll be right back.
Hey, this is Dirk Bauman. You are listening to Taking the Charge.